2016 presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is urging Democrats to nominate somebody who can win the Electoral College in 2020. At a book event in Denver on Monday, Clinton said several of the Democratic candidates could win the popular vote, but, quote, as I know, that's not enough. Clinton got about 2.9 million more popular votes than Donald Trump, but Trump won the Electoral College, the one that determines the winner, 304 to 227. Depending on how you slice it, that's the fourth or fifth time in American history that a candidate won the Electoral College while losing the popular vote. Now, 15 states and the District of Columbia have pledged to send their electoral votes to whoever wins the national popular vote. But that plan, known as the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, wouldn't kick in until enough states sign on to equal 270 electoral votes. Right now, they're at 196. Robert Hardaway is a professor of law at the University of Denver Sturm College of Law. He's written several books about the Electoral College. His latest is Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. Robert, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm pleased to be with you.
Well, you're a supporter of the Electoral College, and we'll get into some of the reasoning for that in just a bit. But are you worried? Are you worried that there's a big movement to get rid of this thing?
Well, no, it's really hypothetical. You really can't abolish the Electoral College under the Constitution unless all 50 states agree. Article 2 says that every state is entitled to their weight in the Electoral College based on their representation in Congress, including two senators. And or the last sentence of Article 5 says you can't abrogate that weight unless every state agrees. So I'm not worried about it unless, because I really don't think every state is going to agree to abolish either the Senate or the Electoral College.
But don't states have the power to set how they determine who their electors go to?
Yes, they do. But that's why they have this weight. How many electors they are entitled to is set in the Constitution and can only be abrogated by the agreement of every state. Now, the MPVIC tries to get around that. It wants to keep the Electoral College, amazingly enough. And then it purports to have states give their electoral votes based on who wins the popular vote across the country. The problem with that is there is no popular vote for candidates. There's popular votes for electors. In some states, electors are not even pledged to a particular candidate. So there really isn't. That's kind of an illusion. You look at the TV and look at the bottom, it says popular vote, but those are votes for individual persons who may or may not vote for a particular candidate. In 2016, one candidate for Hillary Clinton decided not to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, how do you count the 148,000 votes that were cast for that elector who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton? How do you even calculate popular votes? There's really no such thing.
Well, but when people go into their voting booth and pull the lever or mark the line or, pull the old cotton gin, whatever system people are using, it's going to be a name like Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump in 2016, not Bob Smith, the elector.
Well, every state has a different way of putting on the ballot. Most states will have in small print, you are voting for the elector slate. And now this elector slate on the Democratic slate that's been put forward by the Democratic or Republican Party consists of electors who say that they'll vote for a particular presidential candidate. But in many states, they're not even required to do that. In many states, don't even have a penalty if they decide to vote for anyone they want. So how do you count? There are no popular votes for a candidate. You're voting for electors, not presidential candidates.
Talking to Robert Hardaway from the University of Denver Sturm College of Law, author of books including Saving the Electoral College. We're talking about the Electoral College. He says we ought to keep it and not try to come up with plans to work around it. What are the benefits, as you see it, of the Electoral College and the way it divvies up our votes?
Well, the first thing is that it was so important to the founders, the Electoral College and the Senate, upon which electoral votes are based, that it's the only provision in the entire Constitution which cannot be amended by constitutional amendment unless every state agrees. That's the last sentence of Article 5. But if somehow all 50 states were to agree to abolish both the Senate, upon which the Electoral College is based, if they did that, would it be a good thing? Well, every 10 years or so, whoever is a loser in an election in which the so-called popular vote winner didn't win the election, there's usually the losing candidate or party usually tries to put forward some legislation, hoping to get all 50 states to agree to either to both eliminate the Senate and the Electoral College. The last big time that happened was 1956, when Senator John F. Kennedy came in and explained to the members of the Senate, some of whom wanted to abrogate the Electoral College, that you really can't do that. You need all 50 states to agree. And he also pointed out that this direct election, which is really the Russian system, where you don't have an electoral college, you have a number of parties that vie for the presidency, and then you have a runoff. On a runoff, once you eliminate it down to two candidates, one's going to definitely get 50%. But the undemocratic nature of that was shown in the 2000 election in France. They had two candidates. The extreme right candidate got 23%. Someone not many people heard of, 21%. The two major parties got 19%. And they had to make a choice between an extreme right winger and someone they hadn't really heard of. And they were so outraged, that the French voters, by this Russian system, also known as the popular vote system, that they cast 600,000 blank ballots to express their outrage with that undemocratic result, because 65% of the people opposed both candidates.
Well, but we have elections for, say, the senator, a U.S. senator from Wisconsin, that are by a popular vote, and we don't have that kind of result. Why would that be different?
Well, because in the national, you have a national network. The Electoral College has a channeling effect. In order to get even one electoral vote, you have to have a plurality of all the votes in the state to even get one electoral vote. And so as a result, there's compromises between the smaller parties generally before the election rather than after. For example, 1936, the socialists were polling at 10 to 12%. But as you got closer to the actual election, they realized we can't get a single electoral vote unless we get a plurality of all the states in a particular state. So they compromised with the Democratic Party, and that compromise took place before the election. Now, if you look at a place like, say, Italy, where you have a parliamentary-type system, they try to put together these very fragile coalitions after the election, so that very small extremist parties can have an undue weight in the construction of a government. And you get something like, I don't know what it was, 16 governments in 14 years. Very unstable. But so that's the kind of thing that happens when you don't have an electoral college. Of course, in England, they have an electoral college. They don't call it an electoral college. They call it a parliament. But it works the same way as our electoral college. You elect people who go to the parliament, or what we call the electoral college. They then elect the president. In 1974, Labor didn't win the so-called popular vote, but they did elect the most members to the parliament, and Labor formed the government. But no one claimed that that was illegitimate. The drafters of the Constitution realized that the Electoral College ensures that support for a candidate is broad, not just deep. See, you have 90% support for a segregationist candidate in the 1950s in the South. And because of that 90% support in one narrow region, they actually get a majority of the so-called popular vote, even though it's opposed by two-thirds of the rest of the country. So the idea was that support for a candidate has to have support in all regions, not just overwhelming support in one narrow region, with the result that maybe just a few cities on the coast can rule the entire country.
As I understand it, part of the reasoning behind the Electoral College and the Senate representation being equal in all states was that so that smaller states wouldn't be overlooked, smaller or less populous states, I should say. Is that still an important issue in 2019?
Well, it is. And we have to remind ourselves that if it hadn't been for the compromise, the grand compromise of the equal representation in the Senate and the Electoral College, we wouldn't have one nation today. We'd have probably six or seven like they have in South America, because the smaller states said, we'll form our own country. And they were in the process of doing it pretty much. New York and Pennsylvania were forming their own kind of country. They'd already constructed tariffs. The advisors to King George the Third were telling the king that the countries, that North America is, that the colonies are really breaking apart. And the Constitutional Convention, until the very end, until this grand compromise was enacted, we didn't really have much chance of forming one country. The small states said we want equal representation in the Congress. The big states said, no, we want it by population. And so at the last minute, really, the grand compromise was suggested where we do both. We'll have equal representation in one house of Congress and by representation by population in the other. So when people say one person, one vote, the first step would really be to abolish the Senate. And then, of course, the Electoral College would fall. But it can only be done if every state agrees.
We're talking about why the Electoral College was created and how it works with Robert Hardaway. He says we shouldn't be trying to work around it. He's a law professor at the University of Denver Sturm College of Law. His books include Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. We'll go to your calls now. Troy is with us in Janesville. Troy, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, your guest seems almost anti-democratic. He seems like he's discouraging people from voting when he talks about voting for the electors and not the presidential candidate. I mean, if that's the case, let's have the electors run for office and not the presidential candidates. It just seems like he just said that he one person, one vote doesn't even make any sense. And it seems like he's so anti-democratic. I have a hard time understanding his way of thinking.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Anti-democratic to support the Electoral College?
Well, I would say ask the people in France, because they don't have an Electoral College, and they ended up with a choice between an extreme right winger and a person they'd never heard of, because the two major parties got edged out by 1% in a so-called popular vote, which is the Russian system. And the reason the Russian system doesn't work very well is because it results in a candidate who is opposed by up to 3/4 of the entire electorate. Under our system, that doesn't happen. So, you know, it is the most democratic way. That's why usually it's exactly the same as the so-called popular vote. But if he can get 50 states to agree to abolish the U.S. Senate, which is the basis for the electoral the weight that each state has in the Electoral College, that's fine. But that's not the way the country was founded. And that's why John F. Kennedy defended the Electoral College. He says every state has some advantages. The small states have a small advantage in the electoral process. The large states have a big advantage. States like California, with 58 electoral votes, they can use the unit vote rule and cast all of their electoral votes for their favored candidate, which isn't, I don't think, particularly democratic. But we usually get a very democratic result, much more than under the Russian system. And just ask the people in France, 600,000 of whom cast a blank ballot, says this is not democracy. Why should we get a choice between two candidates that are opposed by 2/3 of the electorate?
Thanks for that call. We heard on Facebook from Jeff, who says the debate is framed all wrong. It shouldn't be popular vote versus the Electoral College. A better method would be to split the electoral votes based on percentages as opposed to a winner takes all. And Robert, historically, some states have done, I don't think by percentage of vote, but by congressional district. A couple states do that now, I think. Is there a case to be made for more states divvying up their electoral votes to not have that, you know, California, say, having all their votes go to one candidate?
Well, yes, every state has the option to do that. California was given the option to do that. They said, would you like to divide your electoral votes by a percentage? In which case, they voted against that. I don't think some of them like the idea that they would have to share some of their 59 or so electoral votes with Trump. So they voted against that whole idea. But every state is free to do that, and two have done it. Maine and Nebraska, they do it by district, which is close to being proportional. So there's nothing to stop the states from doing that. It's just that the Colorado voters voted in a referendum about 15 years ago. They didn't want to do it. California several years ago was given that option. They decided that they wouldn't do it. So I would suggest that this fellow go out and get some of these, try to persuade some of the legislators in these states to do it. There's nothing to keep them from doing it.
We're back to our callers now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So we're not technically a democracy. We're a democratic republic.
And that being said, we're not even so good as the Democratic Republic having the Electoral College system, because Puerto Rico has exactly zero elector votes towards the president. And closest thing that we've ever had towards an actual democracy on the planet is probably the Iroquois tribe, which is mentioned in the U.S. Constitution.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Robert, he mentioned Puerto Rico. People point toward Washington, D.C. Should they be able to get into the Electoral College game?
Well, I've proposed a number of minor, well, some people would call it minor, reforms to the Electoral College, but no one wants to reform it because they're still bent on getting all 50 states to abolish the Senate and the Electoral College. They want it abolished entirely, when in fact it's the only glue that brought this country together in the first place. One of my proposals is that Puerto Rico and all the territories should be given some electoral votes.
Thanks for that.
That would solve that problem.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to James now in Marshfield. James, hi.
Hello, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call. So I was just curious on the disparity of each state's population versus the number of electoral votes they get. Like, I my math may be off on this, but like 100, it takes like 114,000 people in Wisconsin to equal one person in Wyoming. I don't understand how that is a fair and equal vote.
All right, James, I'm not sure about the math, but somebody in Wyoming, there are fewer people per elector than Wisconsin, which is still fewer than, say, New York or California or Texas. I think that's right, Robert.
Well, that's exactly the argument that the smaller states, when they wanted to form their own country, they said, we're not going to join a union, and which is based on population, and we are marginalized. That's why some people have proposed, well, okay, we'll keep the Senate. California will get 51 senators, and Wyoming will be lucky to get one senator. And that was actually proposed at the Constitutional Convention, that it be based purely on population. And the smaller states said, fine, have your own country. We're not going to be a part of it. And it was actually it was this compromise called the Grand Compromise, where the small states said, okay, you give us one house in the Congress, which is based on equal suffrage in the Senate. And we're so sure that people in the future, they actually looked ahead 200 years, and they thought that future demagogues would try to take away their equal suffrage in the Senate, upon which the weight in the Electoral College is based. And so that's why they insisted on last sentence of Article 5, which says every state will have to agree to that. And if you could do it, good luck.
We'll bring on another caller now. Paul is with us in Chautauqua. Paul, hi.
Hi. I see his point very well. I agree with what he's saying down there. Would be possible with the East and West Coast to just buy an election by just giving things to the people on either side, ignoring the whole middle of the country, and it wouldn't be fair at all.
Okay, that's a very good question. And I use the analogy of Willie Sutton. He was an infamous bank robber, and they asked him why he robbed banks, and he said, because that's where the money is. Well, if we had a Russian-style election, where are all the votes? They're in New York. They're concentrated. They're in New York. They're in Los Angeles. They're in San Francisco, Chicago, and so on. And so any candidate is going to go where the votes are. And they're going to spend their time where they get the most bang for their buck. Why go to Wyoming, which has a very small population? Why go there? But under the Electoral College system, they have a little bit of an advantage. And as John F. Kay said, when he saved the Electoral College virtually single-handedly in the U.S. Senate, he pointed that out. Yes, the small states have a little advantage. They get that as part of the Grand Compromise. But it's offset by the advantages that the big states have, which is throw all their electoral votes, like California, to one candidate. And that's the whole notion of separation of powers, not to give any one group too much power. That's why he said in Saving the Electoral College, the Russian-type system, the direct election, would break down the federal system under which the states enter the union, which provides a system of checks and balances that ensure that no area or group shall obtain too much power. And it's done that admirably and kept the country together.
We'll leave it there. Thanks for your call. And Robert, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Robert Hardaway, professor of law at the University of Denver Sturm College of Law. He's written several books about the Electoral College, including his most recent, Saving the Electoral College. We talked to him about why the Electoral College was created and why he says we shouldn't replace it with a national popular vote.